Now, Odyssey House is one of Australia's largest rehabilitation organisations, offering a range of drug and alcohol services to those struggling with a variety of addictions. They've just released their annual report, and it reveals that many of those struggling with substance abuse also find themselves affected by mental illness, including depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and borderline personality disorders. More than half of all clients seeking treatment for alcohol and other drug dependence show some mental illness. And there are similar figures for those dealing with amphetamine addiction, particularly speed and methamphetamine, or ICE, as it's more commonly known. James Pitts is the CEO of Odyssey House and has been working in the field of alcohol and other drugs since 1978 and joins us on the line this morning. James, good morning and welcome to Summer Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
Now, in regard to those who've come to you for rehabilitation, is it the case that substance abuse then leads to mental illness, or do the mentally ill find themselves drawn to substance abuse? In other words, is it a chicken and egg situation?
Look, I think, John, it's kind of a vexed question, because certainly all of our statistics indicate that a person who has a mental illness is 60% more likely to also have a drug and alcohol problem, and conversely, a person who has a drug and alcohol problem is about 55 to 60% likely to have some kind of mental illness. So in a lot of cases, a person's drug use is functional in that it may mask and certainly deal with some of the symptoms of the person's mental illness, like you said, like anxiety, depression, things like that. And the same can be said for people who have a mental illness. There's certainly drugs and alcohol in a lot of cases used to self-medicate. And what we find is when people come into the program and when they've been abstinent for a while and the drug effects have cleared, then in a lot of cases that's when you start to see some of the manifestation of some of the mental health issues.
Indeed. Now, you point out that alcohol is the prime drug of concern in your annual report, but also amphetamines, that is ICE and speed. Now, are these two becoming a much bigger social problem than in past years?
Look, certainly, as far as alcohol is concerned, one of the things that we've noticed over the last 3 to 4 years, and certainly that alcohol has, up until certainly this year, has been the drug that has been nominated as the drug of most concern. And that was unusual, because prior to that time, 3 or 4 years ago, most of the drugs that were nominated would be illicit drugs like heroin. Amphetamines, on the other hand, have had one of those features in which they were very prominent, say, like from 2005, 2006 to about 2009, 10. Then certainly their use, or certainly the people who nominated that as a drug of concern, subsided. And then over the last year, we've seen a big upsurge in amphetamine use. And those things, I mean, are a lot of times dictated by drug markets. In other words, that the onset of amphetamine use about 4 or 5 years ago, when we talked about the ICE storm and the ICE panic, things like that, was really dictated by the fact that there was a lack of heroin or access to heroin, and that was determined by the fact that there was a when the United States went back into the Afghanistan, that produces where the majority, about 90% of the opium is produced, and consequently heroin, that certainly heroin became unavailable. And drug markets are like any other market. If there's a product that's, if there's a gap in the market, then somebody steps in to fill that gap. And in that case, it was amphetamine.
Yeah, well, look, tell us a little, James, if you can, about those addicted to, say, ICE and speed. Now, they often show violent, paranoid, dangerous behavior. They're very difficult to monitor, are they not?
People who are dependent upon amphetamine-type substances are a real challenge. And they're a real challenge, like you say, because if somebody is really dependent on amphetamine-type substances, then you'll see a couple of features of their personality. They certainly are prone to exhibit psychotic-like symptoms, and that's mainly because when somebody is speeding, as they call it, then certainly they don't sleep. And so if you don't sleep, you don't have the mind, and the body doesn't have the ability to kind of get rid of some of the trash that you accumulate during the course of the day.
Yeah. You know?
And so consequently, it affects a person's perceptions. People become paranoid. They think that, they hear things, they suffer some, in a lot of cases, auditory and visual hallucinations. They see things that aren't there. They feel like bugs are crawling on their skin, and they're very irritable. And so the old adage that what goes up must come down is also in effect. So that for people who are up a lot, and then when they stop, say after 2, 3, maybe 4 days, then they're prone to what we call rebound depression. So they become very low. They become very irritable, and certainly they can become, while they're using amphetamine-type substances, they certainly can become very aggressive. So when we see people who come into the program who have been dependent on amphetamines, the biggest challenge is to try to get them to be stable, to get them to kind of ride out the adverse effects of their drug use, and to realize that they're in a safe place, and to try to keep them as safe as possible.
Yeah. Can you indicate at all the success rate of Odyssey House, James?
Well, look, we there are a number of ways that we try to stretch that that outcome as much as possible. I would say that certainly we have participated in a longitudinal study that was conducted by the National Drug and Alcohol Research Center, about 5 or 6 years ago, called the Australian Treatment Outcome Study. The study was designed to compare three different modalities of treatment: methadone maintenance, residential treatment like Odyssey House, a no treatment group, which was the control group, and a group that was going through withdrawal. They followed up our sample of residents who participated in the study for 3 years. And at the end of that 3-year period, they found that 70% of the people, the Odyssey House sample, were still drug and crime free. So that's a good indication of success. The other thing that we try to do as much as possible, the biggest cost to society for people who use illicit drugs, is the criminal activity that people participate in to get drugs or get money in order to get drugs, and also the actual money that's spent on the drug use itself. So each year we do a sample of people who have the year prior to them coming into the program, when it's usually when people are most, at their worst, so to speak. And we look at things like their drug use, their criminal activity, how much it costs to participate in medical services because their drug use, welfare payment, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And so last year, we call it each day that somebody's in treatment at Odyssey House is a drug-free and a crime-free day.
Yeah.
So on that basis alone, we had over 30,000 drug-free, crime-free days, and we saved society $16 million. Now, our funding is only, about $6 million on an annual basis, and we also have had samples which have been higher than that. So we think that, on the basis of those, if we didn't do anything else, and that doesn't take into account improved health, improved mental health, certainly getting people job ready, those things, all contribute to very positive outcomes for the people who access our service.
Indeed, it's an extraordinary record. James, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Okay, James Pitts there joining us, who is the CEO of Odyssey House. It's coming up to 16 minutes past 8 here on RN Summer Breakfast.